What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with my favorite CPAs, my favorite tax strategist guys, Kevin Schneider, Mike Pine from Revo Taxpayer Advocacy Group. Multiple guests on the podcast, multiple conversations that we always have. We just had a half hour conversation. We're like, why didn't we just record this for the podcast? we're talking about strategy the whole time. So guys, I appreciate you joining me again.
We're happy to be here, man. I always love talking to someone who loves or appreciates tax as much as we do, almost as much as we do. So thanks for having us.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate you guys. And in fact, it's now that we're kind of getting past the first half of the year, you guys understand and as well as we do, and those of you that are listening, there's going to be a huge rush in about 2 or 3 months when everybody's trying to buy the assets at the end of the day to save on taxes. And I always tell people, man, you need to be thinking about it like now, right? Like this, we got to start, like we're already, our back's already against the wall to get these properties in service by the end of the year. But strategy wise, we're going to talk about a few different things. We'll dive into them one at a time, but really kind of as kind of a bullet points for those of you listening, there's a $512,000 rule that is the limit on what you can write off on certain properties. And a lot of people don't understand that rule. We're going to talk about that. We're going to really dive into PPAs and what that means. And then really, let's start off with the easiest one, which is debunking the myth that we all keep hearing, which is that you are not going to qualify for bonus depreciation and 100% bonus depreciation if you don't manage your property. And so that's something that, you know, I do too. I hear it all the time. Yesterday, I was just talking to a guy and he was adamant. He's like, no, I was talking to another guru in the space. And he said, well, he probably ought to drop the guru line because he's wrong.
think about it just from a standard trader business, because that's the whole purpose of the short-term rental strategy is you have a trader business and you're actively participating in a trader business that offsets your other trader business or W-2 income. Well, me as a business owner, Mike as a business owner, I don't manage every single aspect of my business. That's insane. I got a team. I have administrators. I have an accountant, believe it or not, on staff. I have project managers. Could you imagine if I had to manage every single facet of our trader business? We would not be able to scale. We wouldn't be able to even breathe. So to have the thought that someone managing alongside you, now we're not taking management away from the taxpayer, that you can't do that, but the property manager would manage alongside you. What's the difference in that and just having a tax manager at a tax firm?
Or, you know, in my case, Kevin, you're the managing partner of our firm. You manage the majority of the processes at the firm. Am I now passive because you're the managing partner and because you have other managers and office managers that run the firm subject to your approval and your input? Does that make you not a managing partner? Does that make you not a material participant? No. I will throw in there, though, if you're audited and you're claiming material participation and you don't have a management company and you don't have cleaners, the IRS audit's going to go very easy, right? You can just say, look, no one else is running this. It's my business. Yeah. So how can you say I'm not a material participant?
Yeah,
that would be nice, but that's not the case in most cases. And it's not even smart. Like if you want to have 5, 6, 7 real estate properties or short-term rentals, you are going to be spread too thin to manage them all right. You need people on site to do it. You're going to be managing those people, managing your businesses. Yeah. So in reality, you're going to have help managing that business, but you need to be the one that's managing your managers. You need to be the one that really owns and has the economic detriment if the business doesn't fail, right? Or if the business doesn't perform. So Let's be honest here. You've worked with a lot of management companies, Sean, a lot of good management companies. Do any of those companies or do more than just a few finite amount of those companies care as much about that business as the owner of the short-term rental does?
No, absolutely. You're exactly right. And I think that's where everybody gets a little confused is, and you hit it on the head, you don't have to manage it. You have to participate and you have to be an active participant. And at the end of the day, if you're the owner and you're signing the checks for these big properties and you're making the decisions, you're managing the people that are maybe helping you run this business, at the end of the day, you can't just be completely passive. You're not going to qualify. There is something wrong with that. We're not suggesting that. We're saying, hey, listen, you can be very actively involved. And in my opinion, in more important things than maybe managing the property and in ways to scale and build and grow the business. And, but I'm still very actively involved in my properties and, but I don't manage them. Right. And so, and I think that that's what the confusion is if you're not managing them, or if you're not being the actual manager of the property, that you're not doing anything. That's not the case. And I, you know, I think it's such a misconception that's been out there for so long. And part of it is that people are misunderstanding what we are actually trying to qualify for, which is materially participating in an active trader business. We're saying, hey, listen, this is a little business and I need to make sure that I'm an active participant in making this thing succeed. And many times that's managing the other managers. It's giving the input and reviewing stuff and going over stuff and being involved in certain big decisions as we're building these things up. And that's what it takes. And you still have to cross the T's and dot the I's. And there's things that are very important to do. We were talking about this before. It's like, what qualifies, what doesn't qualify? We don't want to be floating in the gray area. We're saying, hey, listen, we want to make sure when we're running down this road, we work with a lot of high income earners. They don't want a second job. They don't want to be like, have a side hustle necessarily. They want to be actively participating in building a portfolio and qualify with making, they don't want to float in the gray area. They say, I want to do it the right way, but show me how I can do it the right way without being my everyday manager. Right. And I, because I don't want to do that, but I want to do higher level activities because I'm a, you know, I've got to place a bunch of capital. I've got to go build a portfolio. I've got to do some other things that are probably higher leverage activities for their time, but it still counts as actively participating in that business, right?
They're basically becoming the CEO of their own real estate portfolio, right, in short-term rentals. And you, yeah, tell me any CEO or managing partner of any business that's not a material participant, and I'll say, I want his job or her job, right?
Yeah.
It's not possible, man.
Right. It's not. I mean, they're working. Yeah, they're still working. You're still putting the time in. You're just doing different activities. And they have to be activities that are moving real, the business forward, that are actually business type activities that are, you know, otherwise it's not going to qualify, because there's a lot of other people that are telling you how to qualify by, like Kevin and I were talking right before, and Kevin said, you know, go watch this course or go do this or go plug into this podcast, and that counts as all this time that you're doing. That doesn't necessarily count as actively participating in your business.
If we hired, like, just think of it, I just go back to our business. If we have this tax firm, this amazing tax firm, if we hired a partner alongside Mike and I, and then all he did was listen to podcasts and listen to education of how to run a firm or how does tax strategy work, and he just absorbed all this information, that does the business no good. So in this, yeah, it makes no sense to give someone material participation time just by passively and being involved in this industry as a whole. So you actually do have to get in there, make some decisions. And that's why your team's so good, Sean, is you make that process easier. You don't manage it for them in a sense. You coach them and help them make decisions quicker. You have the network to get things implemented, done. You take a lot of that out and makes it easy, but they are the ones at risk. They are the ones putting in the time, energy, and decision on their asset. It's their asset.
Yeah. Right. Let me just try to tie this up in one more quick summary. If we do this, we hire business consultants, we hire marketing consultants for our firm. We rely greatly on their expertise. And the reason we're doing that is because they've seen the same things happen over and over and over again. And we don't want to have to pay our lost time and pay for our failures when we can rely on someone else that's done it many times, and they can help us more efficiently improve, yeah, and manage our business. And mm-hmm. the fact is, we're not passive. We're just having consultants who know what they're doing come in and help us more efficiently and effectively grow our business and make a profit in our business. And that's the difference. If you're passive in your business, you're passive. You're not a material participant, but you can be a material participant with a manager, with consultants, with dozens of consultants.
Yeah. And you're exactly right. The key word that stood out when you were talking to me was efficiencies, right? It's like, hey, it's okay to get a consultant, to follow a blueprint, to have a plan that builds in those efficiencies for you, but you're still doing it. You're still executing. Mm-hmm. You're still the decision maker. It's still your dollars on the line with this investment, right? You're still taking the risk. And so But there's nothing that says you have to do it the hard way. You can like, I shouldn't, you know, you can take a more efficient route. I'm not, you, I shouldn't say the hard way because even the efficient route sometimes is hard. And so, but you, you don't have to spend, you know, and recreate the, you know, the, you don't have to go reinvent the wheel in a game you haven't played before. Yeah. Why would you, right? Go build
that's bad business.
Yeah. Go get the best leverage on your time spent by building in and finding those efficient ways to do it.
Absolutely. So one last point of clarification though, there is in a lot of case law, personal investment time. Personal investment time differs greatly from material participation time. And I think that's where we hear a lot of these gurus say, hey, if you're not a manager, you're not going to be a material participant. Again, is wrong. If it's personal investment time, which is like just reviewing the quarterly financials, that's not going to count towards material participation. It's actually being involved in the true management of the operations.
Right. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good point. And that is something that, you know, that's the thing. There's a lot of times when people are talking about certain things, you have to really listen to what they're talking about because somebody might be talking about personal investment time and they're like, that doesn't qualify. And this is why, and blah, blah, blah. And then we hear it differently and they might be telling you something that's true. And so it's very, this is, you know, any game that you play, there's always, you know, you better understand the game that you're walking into and really line yourself up with the people who really understand what you're trying to do so they can say, here's the right way to do it. Here's the wrong way to do it. Here's what's going to qualify. Here's what's not going to qualify. And that's what this comes down to as well, is really understanding and not just listening to somebody online regurgitate something they heard or overheard and decided, okay, I'm going to make a clip about this and hopefully it goes viral and everybody knows who I am. They actually don't play the game very well. So we're going to, I know we're like guys that are listening, we just like dove into like topics. We just didn't, we really didn't set this up other than, hey, we're just talking about this. And when I have these guys on and we're trying to pick their brains, sometimes that's what I do. So apologies in advance that I'm just kind of like bullet pointing down a couple topics that are coming up with us and a lot of our Vodacy clients and a lot of people we're talking to online right now. But another thing that is a little bit not talked about as much, and a lot of our clients are high income earners. They're busy professionals. They're looking at this asset class as not only a way to build wealth, but also to take some of that tax money that they're paying the IRS and put it into their assets that they're building. And by doing some of the things we're talking about, materially participating, and some of them make a lot of money and they realize that there's a limit to how much we can actually write off. And there's ways around that. But sometimes they're shocked when they buy a really expensive property and they're limited to writing off $512,000 of active income that first year on the asset. So why don't we talk a little bit about that and what that looks like and how they can still very much take advantage of more expensive properties and bigger write-offs, but what that really looks like.
Sure. So what thanks for setting that up, because back in 2017, when Trump's first term came in, he wanted to change the tax landscape quite a bit, and it was very favorable for real estate. But what happens when there's major tax law change or an administration change like this, you cannot just simply just wave a wand and be like, I want 100% bonus. I want it all deductible. I want everything. I want my cake. I want to eat it, all this. And Congress is going to be like, no, we actually do need some revenue. So they put some governors, they put some limitations on all these things. So even though we got 100% bonus, there was a double-edged sword of, okay, there's a 100% bonus, but there's something called 461L. And 461L just states if you're a high W-2 earner, and this only applies to the W-2 earners out there. If you make a W-2 and it's like, let's say it's $1 million W-2, you're doing really well. I have a lot of clients in tech, stocks, getting stock options and all these things. They're getting $1 million+ in W-2 every year. You cannot go start a trader business, i.e. a short-term rental, and expect $1 million on your short-term rental to offset $1 million on your W-2. That 461L is going to kick in. And all it is you have a limit. If you're single, it's $256,000. If you're married, it's $512,000. So all that says is you can have $1 million of losses on your short-term rental, but we're only going to be able to deduct 256 or 512,000 that first year. The remainder that's not deducted, it's still owed to you. You still earned that tax deduction. It just hasn't been deducted yet. That difference carries forward to the next year at a more favorable carry forward, not subject to 461L again the next year. Instead, it carries forward as what we call a net operating loss. And all a net operating loss is stating, hey, I have more losses than I had income, or had some caps that I couldn't deduct it, and I'm going to deduct it next year. And you could deduct up to 80% of all your taxable income using NOLs next year. So in this example, if you had $1 million W-2 and you had $1 million short-term rental loss, you're deducting 512 this year. That remainder carries forward and you're going to utilize all of it, because 80% of $1 million, you're not going to deduct 800 grand. You don't have 800 grand out there to deduct. So you got to utilize all the loss next year. So Mike has a really cool strategy that we do with our high W-2 earners to kind of stack this stuff, because there is strategic ways to utilize 461L. We wish we could use it all the first year, but man, for your high W-2 earners who are earning consistent income, what could they do there?
Yeah. That's why it's uber important to be proactive in planning, because in the current tax year, there's only so much you can do. Unless you're a business owner. If you're a business owner, there's ways around this limitation. Generally speaking, especially if you're receiving your income through a K-1 in a partnership. But let's take the example Kevin just mentioned. You have $1 million W-2 taxpayer. He's got $1 million on his W-2. He buys a property, gets $2 million in bonus depreciation. It's a big property, $2 million in bonus. This year, he can only take 512. Next year, let's say he has $1 million. Well, he now has $1,488,000 of an NOL carry forward. He's allowed to offset $800,000 of his $1 million, 80% of his AGI. So boom, his taxable income year two is only $200,000. Now in year three, you've got whatever's left over also to offset up to 80% of your income.
Yeah.
And you get to layer it that way. And then it really gets exciting. I'm not going to bore you guys or make you fall asleep, Sean. But
hey, I'm getting excited here. Like, so you trained me.
You buy properties each and every year. You're subject to the 461L limitation the year you buy and place that property into service for that specific property. But any net operating loss carried forwards you have from the previous years is an NOL subject to 80% AGI. So you can really layer this. And man, this is cool. And we see high income earners that they're in their prime. They're starting to get their main earnouts before retirement for the next 5 or 10 years. If you get in soon enough, you can layer this enough to where you're keeping their effective tax rate under 6%, under 4%. It is awesome.
Utilizing real estate. And what we even do is proactive is the key word Mike mentioned, is because let's say you make 400,000 this year, but you know next year you're going to vest some options and your income's going to be 5 million next year. Well, let's scoop up 2 to 3 rental properties this year. Let's hit the 461L cap this year. But then we're going to be carrying forward so many losses into that high income year next year that aren't subject to that cap. So it's all about planning and timing. And you kind of have to have a crystal ball in a way. It's like, what am I making next year? You know, well, I'm anticipating a big year. Anything can happen. But that's a way that we could strategize, too.
Yeah. And I think I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just talking to a guy. He knows he's getting a big buyout next year. And we were talking about this stuff, and I actually didn't know this. Like I had to ask you guys for some clarification on this strategy, on being able to stack that and carry it forward, until recently. And I was talking to you about it, but he knows. I mean, he's a 7-figure earner right now, but the company sold, and he knows he's got these buyout schedules that are coming. He's got this massive amount coming next year, and I'm like, listen, you really need to talk to Mike and Kevin. And I actually think he's already talked to you, and then start to stack there are this strategy of, we need to probably buy a few properties this year so that next year we've got that even a bigger carry forward to offset some of those big payouts that he's expecting.
You got it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So the next topic.
Let me segue into the next topic on that one right there. So the next topic is, let's say this guy that you're talking to is expecting an $8 million earnout next year. Yeah. But he's only got, at most, even with borrowing power, $10, $12 million of purchasing power this year. We need to get as much of that to carry forward next year. Most, and I'm going to make the assumption, most of the listeners know what cost segregations are. If you don't, go look at some of Sean's previous podcasts that cover it. But cost segregations is the general way people have been taking accelerated depreciation for years on real estate property. It's been around since the early 90s. Cost segregations, in general, best case world, you're going to get 25 to 35% of the total purchase price of your property back as eligible for bonus depreciation. So you buy $1 million, you get $350,000, best case scenario, mostly, you know, generally speaking. Well, there's something called a purchase price allocation that is required and utilized in business sales and purchases all throughout the country, and have been done so for decades, more than three decades. Now, those are required anytime someone is buying or selling a trade or a business, whether the buyer is selling a trade or business, or the buyer is buying someone's trade or business and converting it to a personal asset. It still requires IRC 1060. What that does, and what IRC 1060 is a willing buyer and a willing seller in an arm's length transaction in a free market, right? They're non-related. They agree what the fair market value of whatever they're buying is, what they agree to. Sean, if I want to buy your pickup truck for $1 million, we know, both know it's not worth even a tenth of that. But let's say I buy your pickup truck for $10,000. I say, Sean, I'll give you, $1 million for your pickup truck. And you say, heck yeah, take it, Mike. And I take that pickup truck and I put it in a place in trade or business, and it's eligible for bonus depreciation. I get $1 million of bonus depreciation on that. Now, it gets a lot more complicated when you're doing real purchase price allocations with real property, but you can do that. And you can buy $1 million property and get 80%, sometimes more, sometimes a lot more in bonus depreciation based on the negotiation between the willing buyer and a willing seller. It's complicated, needs to happen proactively, but it is very doable. It's done all the time. It's just not done in real trade, in real property very often. And I don't understand why it should be. It's one of those things that I suspect, just like short-term rentals, they call it the short-term rental loophole. We call it the short-term rental incentive. That wasn't done much before 2015. Then it started getting out and around, and now everyone's doing it. I suspect this will be that way as well, but you got to be very careful when you're doing it, but it can be done. What kills me about this, Sean, is there are CPAs and lawyers and tax attorneys all over the country. I just dealt with one from a big national firm 2 days ago. Three partners at a big national firm representing the seller of one of my clients, who's the buyer, that said, you can't do this. You have to get a valuation. No, you don't. This is IRC 1060. And then the CPA flat out said, well, I don't really know much about this. I just haven't seen it done in real estate, so I don't think you can do this. That's most tax preparers for you. They're wrong. And when people say it can't be done on real property or short-term rental, if it's a trade or business, it absolutely can be and should be done.
Does it have to be, this is something that I've never asked you, is when you say it's typically or has to be done on a trade or business, it's required to be done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where short-term rentals, we are qualifying these as active trader businesses. Does it have to be an active short-term rental to do this? Or just knowing
it has to be a trader business, but if it's a passive short-term rental, it's going to be a passive loss or depreciation that you create.
Right. So does that disqualify that property I'm buying if it's not an active trader?
It would just be a passive. Yeah. Because when you buy real estate, it's either classified as long-term or short-term, right? So long-term rentals, you have to be a real estate professional and you have to materially participate. Short-term rentals, you have to materially participate to make it active. But let's say we don't make it active. Short-term rentals do not fall under real estate professional rules like long-term rentals, regardless of material participation. As long as the average lease time is 7 days or less, it's going to be considered a trader business.
Okay.
So that still material participation to the just PPA. Makes it. Yes, it would just be a passive. It would be a passive loss, which could help some people. Some people, we stack passive losses. They might have huge amounts of passive income.
Yeah.
So every tax situation is different. It's just active income is probably 90% of our clients, right? They're active burners, you know.
Long-term rentals in most cases can also qualify as a trader business, whether it's active or passive. Again, depends on what Kevin mentioned, real estate professional, material participation. But as long as it either qualifies as a trader business in the hands of the buyer or the seller, not both, either or, Section 1060 purchase price allocation rules apply. And so much cool stuff can be done on that. But you got to be careful.
Yeah. And when you say be careful, like that's what I always lead with our Vodafone members is listen, you guys are the only guys I know doing this right now and that very much understand it or are really comfortable with it. And it is one, you have to proactively do it, right? You can't go after the fact or decide to do it. You have to the offer stage, the offer has to be written a certain way. You have to have some cooperation from the seller. And because there's pros and cons for the seller as well in these situations, they have to understand the offers have to be written correctly. You have to have guys like you in your corner helping you write all this stuff up. But it goes from writing off, you know, like you were mentioning, 25 to 35% of your purchase price as a bonus depreciation to 80 or 90% of your purchase price sometimes. We've seen in some of our Vodacy members, right? So it's a massive, massive advantage to really have, you know, a 2 to 3 times as much of the of a write-off against, for your bonus depreciation.
Right. I mean, let's just again take, for instance, the client I was representing 2 days ago, and those national CPAs like, you can't do this. And they prevented they convinced the seller to not even consider it, which just drives me nuts. But they did. Unfortunately, our client did not come to us first. They just made the offer and they didn't make it contingent on a purchase price allocation. So they had zero leverage to can get these people to at least consider it. And again, it was a problem because they had zero leverage. It was all the way up until the day before close that I finally was able to meet with the seller and their CPAs. And I didn't have enough time to convince them. If I'd had 2 weeks, I would have sent them all the material and convinced them. So you got to be proactive. You got to do it in the beginning. You got to have some leverage. And like you said, the best, most foolproof purchase price allocations, you're going to have disparate tax impact where if someone's saving some taxes in one place, someone's paying more taxes in the other place. If you have that, the IRS is going to respect it. And it doesn't have to be what a fair market valuation would be in a wholesale market. It can be what that willing buyer and willing seller agree to.
Yeah. And that's where the IRS is okay with it. Cause it's like my one question was in the example of the truck is, how is the IRS okay with you writing off $1 million on a pickup truck? It's because as the seller, I have to show $1 million gain on a pickup truck and I'm paying, right. I'm having to, right. And so I'm having to, so there's a trade-off there where the IRS is like, hey, you know, Mike got a really nice write-off, but Sean's paying a big hefty tax bill. Right. And so but in the environment we're in, and this is what's exciting right now, of why I feel like this is one really good reason why I think now is a really good buying environment is properties aren't flying off the shelf. You're not competing with, you know, 30 or 40 buyers like we were. Wait till interest rates drop and see how many PPAs we're able to negotiate when they've got, you know, it's going to be harder to negotiate these deals than it is right now. So take advantage of the environment we're in a strategy that, you know, obviously, you know, you're like, 100% don't suggest you even try to do this on your own. You need to get these guys involved. Like, and Mike and Kev are the only guys I would get involved on a PPA. It's not even close. Like now there's a lot of people doing cost segs and talking about it, understanding that game, materially participating. There's still people that don't know what they're talking about and telling you wrong stuff, but there's more people that understand it than the PPA side of life. And so specifically for real estate, right? And so, this is, guys, this is always a fun conversation for me. I always, you know, I could pick your guys' brains all day, every day, but we're going to have these conversations on a regular basis. I told Jake, let's make sure that at least once every few months we're getting on at least, I mean, a minimum of once a quarter. And, but those of you listening, you know, many of you have already reached out to Mike and Kevin, but you know, go to revotaxpayer.com. You can find these guys there. You can book consultations. These guys don't just work with the short-term rentals and real estate either. They, for you high income earners that are listening to this, that is who they work with. And they've got a lot of different strategies when it comes to real estate and oil and gas and charitable stuff. And like all these different things that they understand how to put you in a position to maximize the taxes that are going out, to keep as much of that in your pocket as possible and put them into other assets, put them into other investments, different ways to really mitigate that tax liability that you're paying. It's crazy not to strategize with this stuff, and it has to be done proactively. This is not, you don't think about the taxes you're paying when you're paying. Right. You got to think about it forward looking.
Let me offer this closing point. Most billionaires, we've seen it all over. Look at the ProPublica release back in 2019. All these billionaires paying very little to no tax. They weren't cheating. They're following the rules. Yeah. They just have millions and millions of dollars spent with tax attorneys and CPAs every year to learn how to utilize the rules for their benefit. Most of us, all those rules still apply to us, but we don't know about them. And that's why we're here trying to educate with you. There are opportunities. You can use the same tax benefits the billionaires are. Don't let them pay less of a percentage of their income than you pay. You probably work a lot harder.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It's one of my favorite to that point when Hillary Clinton and Trump were in the debate.
That's what I was just thinking of.
I always remember that. Like, he's like, it's like you paid $700 in taxes. And he's like, I followed the rules. I didn't break. I mean, the laws are there. I just followed the rules and followed the laws that were in place. And they're out there. Just many of us don't know about it. And we just pay the bill, right? And there's no reason to not do that. And so, yeah, awesome, guys. Listen, I appreciate you always, as always. Those of you looking for some tax advice, strategy, there's nobody better in this world than these two guys, and highly recommend them. Obviously, we always put the links in the show notes, but it's RevoTaxpayer.com to track these guys down and their amazing team over there at Revo. And so we will wrap it up for the day. We always appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. We hope you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. We hope we provide some valuable information for you as you're listening. And so the only thing I ask you, always the two reminders, share the show, like it, review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. We don't run a bunch of ads or sponsorships, so you don't have to listen to a bunch of ads. The only way it grows is if you guys share it organically. And if you like it or review it, those algorithms will share it with other people just like you. But the final, most important thing I always ask you at the end of every single episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.